Well, in terms of a traditional bubble, certainly AI seems to be a contender for that. And of course, the hottest stock on the planet at the moment has been Nvidia. It does seem from an Elliott Wave perspective that it could be coming into a top at the moment.
Die Geldmeisterin. Der Finanzpodcast mit Julia Kistner.
Hello and warm welcome to UK from Vienna. Thank you for being guest of Podcast Geldmeisterin Murray Gunn. I'm very glad you followed my invitation to give us somewhat different global macro perspective from the point of view of Elliott Wave principle. Before we dive deeper, would you please briefly introduce yourself and explain us what the Elliott Wave principle is all about?
Yes, great to be here, Julia. Thanks for inviting me on. So, yes, I'm Murray Gunn, and I work with Elliott Wave International. Been there since 2017. I've had over 30 years experience in the financial markets. I started trained as an economist. And within a very short space of time in the financial markets, I realized that the markets don't act the way that the economics textbooks told us that they would react or act. And that got me interested in the more behavioral aspects of the markets and technical analysis, which led me to start reading Bob Prechter's content and research. And of course, Mr. Prechter had founded Elliott Wave International. So I've been using that all my career, mainly on the, most of my career on the fund management side. And then latterly, before joining Elliott Wave International, I worked as the head of technical analysis for HSBC. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's my background. And I think it's very much like most technical analysts. They start as what we would call fundamental analysts and then go into more of the behavioural aspects of things, whereas it's not the same the other way around. But in terms of the Elliott Wave principle, as I said, I started reading Bob Prechter's work in the early 1990s, and it instantly fascinated me because it made so much sense. And what the Elliott Wave principle is based on, it comes from a man called Ralph Nelson Elliott, who was an accountant in the United States, a very senior government accountant. Used to travel extensively in Latin America. And he was also a tea room entrepreneur back in the 1920s. And that sounds a bit quaint these days, but if you think that tea rooms were as big then as things like Starbucks or any coffee chain, it was a big thing. But anyway, like most people, he lost a little bit of money in the stock market crash in 1929, and that, given his accountant's brain, he wanted to investigate why the markets had reacted had acted the way they had. So, being a sort of forensic accountant, he took the data. He didn't come in with any theories. He just looked at the data, got the data, and examined it, and within that empirical research, he discovered that the markets moves in specific patterns, which he called waves. And most importantly, he realized or discovered that these patterns repeat at every time scale, from the very short term to the very long term. He also discovered that the patterns themselves, the waves, were very often connected or interrelated by the golden ratio or Fibonacci numbers ratios. Mm-hmm. And so this was Ralph Elliott's discovery. He wrote a book called The Wave Principle. He was very also interested in Dow theory, which had been around since Charles Dow's writings in the late 1800s, and Dow theory had developed into the sort of 1920s into the 1930s. And what Elliott had realized was the fact that his discovery was similar to Dow's writings and Dow's beliefs of how the markets acted. But crucially, what Elliott had discovered is that the Elliott Wave Principle added a forecasting element to Tao theory, which I had previously lacked. And that is the basis of the Elliott Wave Principle. So since Elliott's death, it was taken up by Hamilton Bolton, who founded the Bank Credit Analyst, and eventually Mr. Prechter wrote the seminal book, co-authored the seminal book of the modern iteration of the Elliott Wave Principle in 1978. And since then, the principle has developed, and it's very popular around the world.
And I had a great honor to interview Bob Prechter twice, and once was just in spring 2007, and he already sees some corrections going on, heavy corrections, and he had them right, as we know. And then again, I had the honor to interview him in 2010, where he was very bullish for dollar according to the Elliott Wave trading principle, and he had also right. So as head of global market from Elliott Wave, what is your global outlook right now? What waves are we riding now?
Well, from the very macro picture, from the sort of 30,000 feet view, if you like, it's very much still that we're in what we've been calling for a long time a super cycle top. And now not all markets are in the same phase. Obviously, they have different phases that they're in. But what's really interesting is if you look at the last few decades, Japan topped out in 1989, and it has just recovered that previous peak just recently. The European markets, if you look at many European markets and things like the DAX market, if you take out the total return element of the DAX, it's pretty much the same level it was at the turn of the century. So European markets have gone sideways for 24 years. And China topped out in 2007, and it has gone sideways really since then as well. So the only market holding the global economy up really over the last or since the start of the century has been the US market. But what's really interesting is if you look at the market in terms of say real money like gold, priced in gold rather than dollars, or if you look at it relative to money supply or in consumer price inflation or producer price inflation, it's actually down over that time period. So there's it's not the bull market that has, in nominal terms, in the US, has not, if you look at the underlying, you look underneath the hood, as they say, it's not really been a proper bull market. But essentially, in the Elliott Wave terms, we're in what we think for the US market is the very tail end of a major fifth wave, which will then result in a decline going forward. Other markets are different. China is a really interesting case in point. At the moment, like I said, it topped out in 2007. But it has, since then, if you look at the Shanghai Composite Index, it has traced out a very distinctive, what in Elliott Wave terms we call a triangle pattern, where the waves are actually interrelated quite nicely in the golden ratio and Fibonacci ratios. And that pattern looks as though it's actually ended now. So from that point of view, actually China looks like it's bottomed. It could have bottomed, and could be into a major bull market going forward. Now, obviously, not everything goes up in a straight line, but that's something we're looking at in terms of Europe. The rallies, and if you look at Euro stocks or the FTSE 100 or the DAX, like I said, if you strip the total return element out of the DAX, the rallies from 2009 have been very choppy, and that means from our point of view they've been corrected. So from that point of view, we are looking at pretty much imminent peaks in the major European markets. But it's not all the same picture. If you look at markets like the southern European markets, particularly in Greece, Portugal, to a certain extent Spain, the rallies since 2020, the lows in 2020, have occurred in those markets what we call impulsively. So that means that they've occurred in a five-wave movement. And if you see that from a significant low, it means that there's probably a very significant bottom put in place. So, you know, those markets could well be starting a new longer-term bullish phases. But crucially, as I say, it doesn't go up in a straight line, and they have completed completing five waves up from the bottom now. So we should see corrections, this year in those markets as well.
So there are no safe havens right now in the world. Where do you see the main signals for recoveries or for crisis?
Well, certainly there's a lot of complacency around at the moment. If you look at various indicators, you know, we look at the Similis Fed Financial Stress Index. Mm-hmm. That's at the lowest level since just before the Great Financial Crisis. And so that is indicating that market participants are very, very complacent. And of course, that's made up of things like, you know, volatility, credit spreads. And if you look at, junk bond spreads, they're relatively tight into U.S. Treasuries. Interestingly, though, if you look at the junkiest element of junk bonds, the triple C's versus the single B credits, for example, that's indicating that perhaps risk appetite is waning just at the very moment. So there are certainly indicators around that suggest that we could be peaking out. And if you look at things like sentiment surveys, the bull bear surveys, bears have almost entirely disappeared. Mm-hmm. No one responding to these surveys who's bearish, and that's an historical extreme.
Is this typical for a peak of a wave?
Certainly, yes. It's the psychology which was mentioned by Dow and really taken up by Elliott, and especially by Frost and Prechter, talking about the psychology of waves. What we find is that at the start of a bull market, you know, everyone's bearish and all the news is bearish. Of course, think of the low in 2009. I mean, the financial media, everyone thought the world was coming to an end, the financial markets were coming to an end. And of course, that's when the low occurs, when everyone's bearish, or most people are bearish. Mm-hmm. And it's the same for the topping process. It's when the bears disappear and everyone's bullish and everyone's involved and everyone's invested in the market, that's where the tops appear.
Mm-hmm. So you would say right now the risk appetite is too high?
It would certainly seem to be stretched. There is a difference, certainly with regards to, you know, if you look at corporate leverage, certainly the financial system doesn't appear to be perhaps just as leveraged as it was before the Great Financial Crisis. But there are other elements. There's absolutely no doubt that debt is the huge issue. Mm-hmm. And obviously the stock of debt that not only governments have, but corporates have, is an increasing burden. Now, during the pandemic, or just after the pandemic, when rates were lowered to zero, pretty much, and it was a kind of free money era going around, a lot of corporates took advantage of that time to raise money and to issue bonds, which are now just coming due. And obviously, since then, interest rates have climbed a lot higher. So these corporates are going to be having to roll over that debt at much higher interest costs, much higher costs of doing that. And so that's where problems might occur.
Mm-hmm. And how do you include geopolitical risks in the Elliott Wealth Theory?
Well, that comes across in various, you know, measurements. You know, we look at each market individually. We don't get too hung up on correlations. because correlations can move around, they can wax and wane, and sometimes you think, you know, markets are related, and then that relationship disappears. So we look at markets individually, and what in that regard, what's been interesting over the last year, at least, we've been looking at the metals like gold, and noticing that gold was about to, you know, move up quite substantially. And we've been telling our subscribers that over the last few months. And of course, that's not happening. Is that, you know, people might rationalize that as being in relation to the increased geopolitical tensions in the world. Perhaps that's the case, but all we know is that the patterns in terms of the Elliott Wave principle were telling us that gold was going to move higher. And it's the same case for silver.
And so there we are already at the peak, or is it still going on?
Oh, no, the pattern recognition of the Elliott Wave principle, it suggests that gold and silver have quite a way to go before the peak. It does look like they are in, certainly from gold's point of view, at least in a fifth wave. But what's interesting about that is that fifth waves in things like commodities and gold, in particular metals, they're driven, unlike in the equity market, where fifth waves in an advance are driven by greed. Fifth wave advances in metals, and some commodities are driven by fear, you know, fear of geopolitics or fear of rationing in terms of commodities. So in that respect, fifth waves in commodities and metals can be what we call, in the wave principle terms, we call extended, so they can go on for quite some time.
A colleague of yours warned also of the earning concentration precisely in Europe, of the steep rise of the luxury producer LVMH and also the tech company ASML. What is the problem with this, if there's so much concentration of earnings?
Well, it is a classic sign of a mature advance in the stock market. You know, since Dow's day, a lot of the analysis that we look at, being technical analysts, is to judge whether advances, bull markets are healthy or not. In Dow theory terms, the way of doing that was looking at in relation to the industrial the industrial average making new highs along with the transportation average. In other words, that was a healthy market. And it's the same concept in terms of what we're alluding to here is in terms of what we call breadth. Market breadth. So there needs to be a broad rally. If the rally is healthy, it should be a broad rally. You know, all boats should be rising, you know, on the tide. If there's only a few stocks or a few sectors, you know, driving the market higher, you start to ask questions about the health of the market. And what tends to happen historically, the statistics show this out, is that at market tops, you tend to have what we call narrow breadth. In other words, just a few stocks making the running of the market. And that's exactly what's happening now in Europe and famously in more so in the US.
If I follow the Elliott Wave theory, should I be a contrarian, or what should I do with this knowledge?
Well, the great thing I like about the Elliott Wave principle is that it does both. I mean, a lot of technical analysts or investors or traders who follow technical analysis or have a technical analysis methodology, you know, you can bucket them into, you're either a trend follower or you're a contrarian in terms of looking for reversals in the market. The great thing about the Elliott Wave principle is that it does both, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, it can anticipate when we're likely to have a reversal of a fifth wave or you know, second wave or whatever wave we're talking about. But it can also anticipate when we're likely to have a trending market, for instance, you know, when there's a pattern like a triangle, in particularly a fourth wave position, we can anticipate that the next phase should be a trending market in that fifth wave. So, yeah, the Elliott wave principle is both a trend-following methodology and a contrarian methodology.
We always have the same patterns at the Elliott wave theory. Did they never change, or could they change?
No, I mean, it's really interesting. From Elliott's original research, the patterns have remained, you know, very consistent. Mm-hmm. Elliott was identifying turn angles, impulsive waves. Don't want to get into too technical aspects about it, but I mean, we're what we call flat, expanded flat corrections, ending diagonals. And what's interesting is that what Elliott discovered, a lot of the subsequent writings on technical analysis took the pattern recognition of Elliott and put different names to them. For example, you know, an ending diagonal in Elliott wave terms, and what Elliott discovered, became a rising wedge, which other technical analyst methodologies might call it. So the patterns are very consistent. And there's a reason for that, and that's because human behavior is, from a herding point of view, from a mass human behavioral point of view, it's relatively predictable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right, yeah. And so what do you see, or what do you predict right now? Do you see anywhere bubbles?
Well, in terms of a traditional bubble, certainly AI seems to be a contender for that. And of course, the hottest stock on the planet at the moment has been NVIDIA. And we've been looking at that over the last few months. It does seem, from an Elliott wave perspective, that it could be coming into a top at the moment, a significant top. So we're watching that carefully. But certainly the buzz, the hype, it's very reminiscent of the late 1990s when, if you had .com added to your company name, then it would be a huge hype around it. If you have anything to do with AI these days, then certainly there's a huge hype. And so from that point of view, it's a contender for a bubble. And the other one is, from a European point of view, perhaps more is specifically looking at like the anti-obesity drugs that are in the market at the moment. And the reason that's a contender for a bubble is by looking just at the share price of Novo Nordisk, and which is the sort of leader there. And that, from an Elliott wave perspective, it looks like it might be coming into some sort of peak there as well.
And what about India? They have PA ratios which are quite higher than the US PA ratios.
Certainly, from that point of view, it could be a contender, at least in the short term, for peak to be put in place in India. But from a longer term perspective, the Indian market does look like it's in much more of a longer-term bull phase. But that doesn't exclude the fact that it could have corrections along the way. I mean, obviously, like I said, things don't move up in a straight line.
At the end, the conclusion, which markets are right now, regarding the Elliott wave theory, quite dangerous already, and which one have good perspectives?
Well, starting with the good, certainly China looks like it's it could be putting in quite a significant low in China. And that kind of fits with the news as well, the sentiment. Everything's bearish about China, has been bearish about China at the moment. And you'd expect that at bottoms in markets. From a topping perspective, the US stands out as being perhaps the most dangerous market. The US is the most important economy. It's the largest economy in the world. The US consumer basically holds up the world economy. And so, should, as we suspect, the US market starts to come into a declining phase, then we would expect that to affect the global economy in general as well.
Mm-hmm. But the declining effects you don't see right now, or in an election or voting year?
No, we see some dangers this year, for sure. You know, obviously, there's a lot of people might think that the Federal Reserve controls the economy. We've shown to our subscribers over the decades that the Fed really follows what the market is telling it to do rather than controlling anything. But still people think that, you know, the Fed might cut interest rates this year and that's going to hold the economy up. We don't really pay much attention to that. All we look at is the patterns that's coming through from human behavior in terms of market structure. And that's telling us that this year it could be quite dangerous for the markets before the end of the year.
US or also in Europe?
That would be both US and Europe. We follow the a global stock market index as well, and that appears to be very close to a top. And, of course, Europe is a big weighting in that as well.
Mm-hmm. And what about your expectations for interest rates? You just said you don't pay so much attention, but what about inflation?
Sure, we certainly pay attention to interest rates. You know, one of our good calls over the last few years has been the fact that we were telling subscribers in 2020 that there was a very high probability that bond yields were about to enter a major advance, a major up move in bond yields and obviously bear market and bond prices. And we had alerted subscribers to that in 2020, 2021, before the big move up in bond yields. And what's really interesting from that point of view is that bond yields had moved up, interest rates had moved up from obviously zero pretty much in many markets. But they've moved up from an early wave principle point of view, they've moved up in five waves. And so what that means is two things. It means that once you see a five-wave movement up from a significant low, we should see a three-wave correction lower. And that's what we're seeing at the moment. We're having this corrective phase lower. But it also means that there should be another movement higher, another five-wave movement higher after the three-wave correction has ended. And so this is where the forecasting ability of the Elliott Wave principle comes into its own. And so what that's telling us is that interest rates or bond yields will have another significant move higher over the next few years. At least that's what the Elliott Wave principle is telling us. And from that, could we infer that consumer price inflation stays higher than most people think, perhaps? What's interesting, we were just looking at the break-even level of inflation as derived from the inflation-protected securities market, and it does look like we're kind of into a new higher phase for those inflation expectations.
Mm-hmm. So there you're a little bit a contrarian.
Well, I guess, certainly at the moment everyone's expecting interest rates to come down, consumer price inflation to be subdued. And so, yes, I think perhaps that'll be the shock over this year, the surprise that people are not expecting.
Mm-hmm. Is the shock perspective that bad, like the interview I had with Bob 17 years ago before the crisis? Are we again in such a situation, or is it a little bit lighter?
Well, different markets. But the structure suggests, certainly with the US market, that the next decline could be very sharp indeed. And we obviously follow the markets every day and the structures change every day. But at this juncture, it would suggest that the next decline in the US markets could be quite dramatic.
And you don't have a time horizon for this decline.
Well, we look at the markets every day, but we do think that this year is a very big risk that the markets will start to decline this year, mm-hmm. Into next.
Oh, I hope you are not right, but I say very much thank you. It was really a pleasure, and I will follow what happens then. Thank you very much.
Well, that's great, Julian. Can I just say, if any of your listeners and watchers are interested, if they could go to ElliottWave.com,
yeah,
is our website, and you'll get all the information you need about Elliott Wave there. But thank you, Julian. It's been a pleasure.
Alles Gesagte ist nur die persönliche Meinung von Julia Kistner und daher keine Anlageempfehlung und keine Rechts- und Steuerberatung. Für Verluste, die aufgrund von getroffenen Aussagen entstehen, übernimmt die Autorin Julia Kistner keine Haftung.